Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I sat and watched the entire hockey game, Steve, between the Lightning and the New York Rangers. And I have to tell you, that had a playoff feel. I know every point is important right now, especially for Tampa Bay. But they came out and for about a period and a half, they were pretty much outskated, down 2-0. And then what happens in the postseason sort of happened in this game. And that is, man, all their best players played unbelievable, starting with Braden Point. I mean, the guy tied a franchise record, with 6 points, and he was sensational. A hat trick, I think it's his third of the season. Is that right?
I believe you're correct. Yes.
Yeah, I think that's true, because I think it tied. You got to go way back a number of years, maybe prior to 2000. But regardless, between him, Kucherov, of course, Stamkos with the go-ahead goal. This had, you were in the building. There was a lot of New York fans. They were making a lot of noise.
There was a lot.
So, felt like a playoff game.
It was, and the Lightning came out flat. And, I mean, right off the, opening faceoff.
Right.
They win the faceoff, turnover, and Kreider's got a breakaway.
Yeah,
now, exactly. Vazzy stopped it, but the Lightning early in the game struggled on the faceoff circle, which, impressively, they actually won more faceoffs than they lost for the night after being dominated in the first period.
Right.
Gave up several turnovers that led to odd man rushes, including some of the goals. Just a really bad first period. And you're like, it looked a lot like a week ago, coming off 4 days rest between games, and just didn't play very well. The second period, they came out better. But it really wasn't until about halfway through the game. And all the goals came, they came after the 30-minute mark. So in the second half of the game,
right,
all the goals came. And once the Lightning got rolling, they were rolling.
Yeah.
And Braden Point was phenomenal tonight. They put Anthony Duclair on that top line.
That made a difference to me. I mean, I thought it was a great move, and Duclair in just a couple of games already has a couple of goals. But boy, does he fit with this team, right? Fast, skilled, knows when to go to the net. I think both his goals has been him, being in the right spot in the crease, and then them just finding him. But he's really, both those guys that they picked up have really added a little bit of juice, right? And I think, you have to have good players. I mean, it starts there, right? You can't just trade for anybody that's going to make a difference. And these guys can both play. But I think when you get guys that come from a certain situation and they're being dumped into a team that's fighting for a playoff spot that has sort of the pedigree and the history that the Lightning do and the good players they have, that ignites them too, right? That's like a second life for their season. And I think the team feels that. I think they can feed off of their enthusiasm.
No question about, well, these are veteran guys.
Right.
But they came from teams that had no shot at doing anything this year.
Right.
I mean, San Jose has been awful, which is where Duclair came from. And Arizona went through a huge, long losing streak at one point. And so they get to come here. But not only they come to a team with great pedigree and stars and that, but they're friends. Duclair and Dunbar are friends, and they've trained together in summers in the past. They've never played together.
Mm-hmm.
But so that helps. But they're also, and you've heard some of the players even mention this, how great they've been in the locker room already.
Good dudes, yeah.
Like they've added some looseness and levity and some energy to the locker room even.
Right.
Maybe things that have been missing a little bit since you don't have Pat Maroon and Corey Perry and some guys like that.
That's a good point.
And it seems like these guys kind of, I don't want to say filled a void in that regard, but have added some new energy when you're hitting the stretch run of the season. And, this is when it all counts. But you know, keeping the room loose, keeping it light, adding that energy can be a good thing. And it seems like through two games in about a week that they added two really good guys that have meshed really well in the locker room as well as on the ice. And, you know, you see Duclair on that top line, like Duclair speed and Braden Point speed.
Whew.
What's the defense supposed to do? Like, you got to back up.
Get on your heels, and that's what makes it easier to get it out of the zone and into your side, right?
Which creates space for Cooch.
There
that
you go.
That speed can create space for Cooch. And, you know, see, I mean, Point with 6 points, Cooch with five, and the one goal he didn't get a point on, he would have been the next. He passed it to Cirelli, who passed it to Point, who passed it to Stamkos for the goal.
Right, right.
Like, you know, Cooch, it was on a power play, but he was right in the middle of it there. You know, just an incredible night to come down. They said they were dominated that first period, down 2-0.
Oh, it was. I mean, they were on their heels. I mean, mm-hmm. New York, they're a really good team, obviously, but they came out, yes. They were flying, and they've been playing really, really well. That's the thing. Like, you beat a New York team that's been playing well, that was up 2-0, that was dominant through, like you said, a period and a half.
They're a very disciplined team. Like, you can't make mistakes against them. Because they will fly the zone and capitalize on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start dancing at the blue line, and they take that puck. They're going the other way with an odd man rush every time.
Yeah,
like, and they're really good at it. And you saw that. The first goal was that way.
Right.
You know, Hedman pinched, tried to make a play at the blue line, got by him, and now Panarin and Trocheck are off to the races.
Yeah.
Darren Radish and Braden Point both take the same guy. Panarin's got a wide open net. You know, you can't do that kind of stuff against the Rangers. And for the first period, they were doing a lot of that. And the fact it was only 2-0 was a good thing.
The other thing they do is when you have the puck is they pointed this out during the broadcast is that they pick you up man-to-man very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you're trying to get into your zone, you might have a chance to dump it and that's it. And, you know, they're just really good of matching up, you know, on that end and then winning the puck and getting it out of there and they're back to the other side. So it was kind of a clinic in a way. I mean, it was when they're down 2-0, I'll be honest with you. I said, whoa, this is going to be rough because if they don't win this game against New York, just looking ahead, they're going to go to Florida, who's the best team in the conference at this point. And then you're going out west. And, of course, anytime you go out west, it's tough, but you're starting in Las Vegas. So you could be looking at no points for three games here. So, I mean, if you know, you always look for a turning point, and who's to say if they can't follow this up with any wins in the next three or four games, it may not matter. But this might be one of those games that they look back on and go, okay, yeah, remember, you know, we got a little infusion with Duclair mm-hmm. and them, and, you know, and then – down 2-0, and then all of a sudden we flipped the script, you know, on the season, and a little bit of belief, you know, took over in that room. Now we got a long way to go, but
well, right now this would be the first round playoff matchup.
This is who they'd play.
Yeah.
Wow.
So if the playoff started today, and before going into this game, it's the same way. This would be the first round playoff matchup. The Rangers is the number one seed in the Metro. The Lightning is the number one wild card. And so now you've given yourself some confidence, and you maybe leave a little doubt in New York's mind.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I got to believe the Rangers, or for that matter, anybody really wants to play the Lightning in the first round.
That is what everyone nationally is saying. And reading the New York writers after the game tonight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's, look, I'm not sure Lightning are built to win a Stanley Cup is what.
Probably not.
This is what they're saying, you know, but. Tonight just reminds everybody this is not a team you want to face. Every one of them said, I'd rather take my chances with the Flyers.
That's great.
The Red Wings, with the Islanders,
uh-huh.
than having to face Braden Point, Nikita Kucherov, Steven Stamkos, Andre Vasilevsky, Victor Hedman. Like, you know, this team won this Eastern Conference 3 years in a row. You know, there's still a great core here that knows how to win. All of them say they'd rather take their chances somewhere else. Like, this is not the matchup you want in the first round. And that's pretty much the consensus, what many of the pundits in hockey are saying. Now, you know, you still got to play it on the ice and win it on the ice, but.
Sure. No, but it makes sense.
Tonight showed what they can do.
Yeah, it makes sense. When you have that many players that have that much hardware, there's still a champion's heart, you know, underneath that. And you know, as Cooper said, he said that, you know, I'll tell you, we have a group that wants to make the playoffs and they believe they can. And that doesn't mean that, you know, this win's going to put them in it. But, you know, with that group and, you know, it probably took them a while because they added a lot of new faces to this team. Isn't this, Steve, the most in of this run, right? Of this, I don't know how far back you want to go, Columbus maybe, mm-hmm. the series they got swept in. But of this run, isn't this the most sort of new cast that they've had to mix with their bunch from that time?
Well, I mean, let's look at tonight's. We'll just look at tonight's lineup. Mm-hmm. Duclair's new.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry's new. Mott's new. Glendenning's new. Mm-hmm. Chafee's new.
Mm-hmm.
Dumba's new. So there's seven of your 20 guys that skated tonight are new.
Mm.
That weren't there last year.
Yeah.
Am I missing anybody now? DeHaan's new. He didn't skate tonight. There's another one that's new. Watson's new. He's on the roster. He didn't skate. So nine of your 23 guys on the roster right now were not there on this team last year. So that's a lot. That's a lot of turnover.
It's damn near half. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, they've always added pieces, but to have that mm-hmm. much for a whole season and still be adding, you know, two new players as late as they have yep. at the deadline.
And even if you just want to the turnover the last 2 years, I mean, new guys from last year,
mm-hmm.
AC Mont, Janot,
yeah.
Radish, Perbix. Flurry,
right.
There's five more, so that's 14 out of your
those guys haven't lifted a cup.
That's five. That's 14 of your 23 since 2 years ago.
Yeah, they haven't lifted a cup yet. So,
which, by the way, it's hard to believe. Next year is the 5 year anniversary
since their first one,
the 2020 Cup,
or not their first, but the first of yeah. this group.
Yeah.
Wow, and that was in the bubble, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to believe it's been 5 years since the bubble.
Well, it's 4 years, so next year is the fifth.
But next year will be, yeah.
It's been 4 years.
Even that seems like a whirlwind, you know? I still think I got some mask laying around the house somewhere, everywhere.
Well, that's how the boat parade originated.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And
that's the original one.
The Lightning put that together, yeah. And now they're going to have to design one for Jason Light, which we'll get to in a minute, but... I'm telling you, when I drive up to One Buck Place these days, this is really a tangent, but when I get out of my car, I almost instinctively want to go to a trailer that they had set up past the players' parking lot and get tested. You know, it's crazy what this country went through, and especially to play sports. That was really, really something. But yeah, you know, the other thing is that they're under 20 games now. To the end of the season. You mentioned that a couple teams that they need to finish on top of lost, right?
The Lightning keep getting tons of help around the league. Like, incredible amounts of help. Detroit lost their seventh straight game in regulation.
Whew.
Like, they were ahead of the Lightning not that long ago. Now the Lightning have a 4-point lead on Detroit? Yeah, 4-point lead with the same amount of games.
Okay, yeah, they've gotten rid of the games at hand now.
Yeah, I mean, the Islanders are 4 points back for the top wild card. The Islanders do have a game in hand, but not two, so you can't catch them. The Lightning are tied with the Flyers, who are third in the Metro. But they actually have a game in hand on the Flyers. Like, there's teams actually that have played more games than the Lightning at this point, which is incredible. The Lightning are sitting in a good spot right now. Now, the question is, could they catch Toronto? 8 points back, and Toronto's got a game in hand with 16 to play. Be pretty tough. So they're probably going to get the wild card.
That's what it feels
like. At that point, you're either playing Florida, New York, or Boston in the first round.
Well, you take your chances with New York or Boston. I'm not sure you're going to want to play Florida, who they got next down in Sunrise.
Well, we'll see how the game tomorrow goes.
True.
That's the Lightning know the Panthers well. They've played them in the playoffs several times.
It's become a great rivalry because mm-hmm. of the postseason, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's,
I mean, that, they've denied the Panthers so many times.
The NHL has created their playoff system. They don't seed it 1 through 8. They right. seed it basically based on divisions and then wild cards because they're trying to form rivalries.
Mm-hmm.
Because the playoffs are where rivalries form.
Right.
Like, you know, playoff games are, you know, or just regular season games are great. And tonight felt pretty tough. But the Rangers and Lightning have played several times in the playoffs recently, which is why these get intense games, you know. In Boston, the Lightning played them, and then they played Toronto, and now Florida. Like, I mean, these are this is how you form rivalries in hockey is the playoffs because the there's nothing like the playoffs in hockey. They're incredible, and it's really a war of attrition throughout, and what those players go through in the playoffs is just incredible. For four game series to win the cup. Like, when you win that cup, you earned it. No question about it. But the Lightning tonight, this was a really good win because it was a really bad first period. And in part because New York's really good and they played a really good period.
Mm-hmm.
But the Lightning found a way to start turning it around. And then even when they fell behind in the third again, you know, they tied it at 2 right before the end of the second. You go to the intermission. And then the Rangers come out in the first 2 minutes and score a goal. And they go up 3-2. But the Lightning answered back less than 2 minutes later. And then it was a tie game for the next 10 minutes or so, and then the Lightning took over. The power play, Stamkos gets the goal. Get another one from Point, which was a theme tonight. And then Cooch gets the empty. And Cooch, don't look now, but the scoring race, which Cooch has led most of the season, he was trailing MacKinnon by 8 points going into tonight.
Yeah, I saw that.
Now it's 3. And 3 points. Cooch has an extra game to play still. Colorado's played one more game than the Lightning.
Right.
So he's now only 3 points back, although Connor McDavid's right in the hunt now too.
Mm-hmm.
But don't think Cooch isn't motivated to get some points there too to help.
What are the odds? Just thinking about that for a second. If he were to win the scoring title as it's mm-hmm. constituted in the NHL, it's certainly not an automatic that you're the MVP. But if you're on a playoff team mm-hmm. and you carry them the way he has this year, would he be overlooked because they haven't had their best year as a team? Or is the fact that, you know, he's been such a good player for such a long time that they would recognize what he's done?
I think MacKinnon's going to win the MVP.
Do you? Yeah.
Now, several things go into that, and tell me how the scoring race ends. Mm-hmm. First of all, MacKinnon has a point in every home game this year.
Jeez.
There's not a home game he hasn't pointed in yet.
That's crazy.
And Colorado's a really good team in the West. You know, you could make an argument for either player. And McDavid's trying to make that case, too, as he's moving up the score sheet. And Austin Matthews with the goals. The amount of goals he's got is making a case, too. I mean, the fact of the matter is there's 4 really good players this year all making a case for the Hart Trophy. Like, you know, when Cooch scored the 128 back in 18-19, there was no question he was winning it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was the best player in hockey on the best team, not even close. You know, and there's other years, but this year there's 4 really good players that you could all make a case for the Hart Trophy. Now, you want to say most valuable? If you took MacKinnon off Colorado, you think they're still a playoff team?
No.
Probably. Oh, I think they would be.
You think they would be?
Yeah, they got enough talent. That may be the second best roster in hockey behind Florida.
Okay.
Take Matthews off Toronto, you think they're still a playoff team? Probably. Are they as good as they are? No. Take McDavid off Edmonton, are they still a playoff team? Maybe. That one, maybe. You take Cooch off the Lightning this year, are they a playoff team? I don't think so. Like, I mean, he's 40-some points ahead of Braden Point. Like, I mean, Cooch has carried this team offensively this year. So if you want to say most valuable, you could definitely make a case for Cooch. But we know it's not just that goes in.
I think the fact that he's a Russian, I think the All-Star game thing probably tweaked people the wrong way. I don't know that he's the most popular guy in the league that vote. And who votes? Is it a writer's vote?
Yeah, and I think some of it is he's not a center.
Yeah.
And centers, you know, generally dominate run things, control things. Yeah. You know, and he's a winger. And so I think he gets at a disadvantage when it comes to some of those votes, too.
Or you could argue, though, that it's harder to do what he's doing as a winger.
Mm-hmm. But he doesn't take face-offs, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, tell me how the next 16 games go as far as scoring and, you know, who's leading and lots can change.
The other thing that happened on Thursday, I had a chance to have really three separate media availabilities with free agents that Jason Light has signed. You know, there's always two parts to this, right? There's the pursuit and the, you know, the negotiation phase where you're, you know, taking the temperature every day and, you know, who's going to be next. And of course, you know, the franchise tagged Antoine Winfield Jr. And then you had, you know, the legal tampering period, if you will, the negotiating period approaching. And then, you know, all of a sudden Mike Evans looks like he wants to enter free agency and then boom, he doesn't. And so we've been riding this sort of roller coaster, you know, Mayfield on Sunday and on and on. And now the players are starting to come in. We've had big, massive press conferences for guys like Evans and Mayfield in the big room, as they say in Las Vegas. And then today we had a couple of conference calls, you know, with the two Chases, Chase McLaughlin, the kicker, and Chase Edmonds, the running back, who, you know, McLaughlin signed a 3-year deal and well deserving of that. His story is still amazing to me. Like, you know, when you talk about a franchise that went through a period, a good long period, where they were just, you know, the team of the damned when it came to place kicking, right? I mean, how far back you want to go? Really, where Jason Light got here is when things really started to turn south. But all the trouble they've had, and then they finally kind of settled it down a little bit with Ryan Succop, and he's consistent enough to get them to win a Super Bowl. He's a Super Bowl winning place kicker. And yet, you know, is at an age where he really didn't have a lot of range, you know, beyond 45, 47 yards. And so they, you know, he's getting up there in age and Todd Bowles takes over and he wants a little stronger leg. And they find this guy who, you know, Chase McLaughlin had been with, this was his 11th team, but not just the fact that it was his 11th team, but it was his 11th team since like 2019. And, you know, a couple times with Indianapolis, he doubled up a few times, but it was incredible just the journey this guy had been on since he left Illinois, where he played for Lovie Smith, by the way. And he'd always been really good wherever he'd been. He'd never been as good as he was last year. I mean, he's had a franchise record in field goal percentage, 93.5. He was 29 of 31 in field goals. But the biggest stat that still blows me away, and they got exactly what they wanted, was he was 7 of 8 in field goals of 50 yards plus. Man, I'm telling you, that's incredible. And it wasn't a fluke. I mean, this guy can absolutely boom him. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but you talk about just, you know, money. And that's what he was for them, money. And, you know, you feel good about him signing here. You think about the journey Baker Mayfield has been on. You know, McLaughlin's like, hold my beer. You know, wait a minute, man. I know you've been to four teams. I've been to 11. So he's got nothing on him. But it was fun to, you know, to talk to him. And then, of course, Chase Edmonds kind of came on late in the season as the change of pace back to, you know, Rashad White. In the beginning, Sean Tucker had that role, the rookie out of Syracuse, and he didn't handle it very well. Like, the game was a little too fast for him. It, you know, in preseason when he was just, you know, see ball, run ball, not much game planning, he really shined because he's got the prototypical size, he's got quickness, explosiveness, all that. But then they got into the regular season games, and it just kind of sped up on him a little bit. So Edmonds got hurt early in the season, because if you're not playing a lot, certainly if you're not in that backup role, at least you're running down covering kicks, and then that's how he got hurt. So It took him a while to get his legs under him after that. But at the end of the season, Chase Edmonds was an impact player. I mean, he was, you know, when White would come out after a series or two or maybe three, they didn't miss anything. In fact, Edmonds had the fresh legs, and that's kind of his role. You know, the defense is a little tired. Maybe you're into your long drive or something like that. And he came in there and gave them a spark running the ball and catching it. And I think the last five or six games, he averaged close to 5 yards a carry. I mean, that's how proficient he was. So he comes back and he's one of those great, you know, guys in the room, as they say in hockey. But, you know, he's the old hat now in the running back room and really led those guys. And he accepts his role. You know, I thought he's a great guy to talk to. He's very mature about, you know, the way you stay around in this league is to understand your role. You know, not everybody can be the star, but you have to find, you know, a place for yourself in the NFL. So it was fun to talk to him and Edmonds. And then sort of the big room, if you will, was reserved at the Advent Healthcare Center for Jordan Whitehead, who returns after 2 years with the Jets. And I like this about Whitehead, Steve, and I remembered at the time, you know, the Bucs were still – Tom Brady was back for another year, and they had won a Super Bowl, and it was, you know, almost going into the second year after they'd won a Super Bowl. And he's a free agent, and they're still adding little pieces for Brady here and there, you know. And all of a sudden, they let Whitehead go. You know, he goes to the New York Jets for not all that much money, and they really have never replaced him, you know. They really struggled to find that safety opposite Antoine Winfield Jr., and it wasn't for a lack of trying, but, you know, all the Keanu Neals, the Logan Ryans, the Ryan Neals, and any other combination of those names, they just didn't get it done. They all, not that you look for interceptions necessarily from those guys, because they were kind of trying to be what he was, which is a box safety, but among all three of them, they only had two interceptions. What's interesting is when Jordan went to the Jets, they played him more in a cover two, cover four routine where he was kind of back off the ball more, and it forced him to become what he hadn't been for Tampa Bay, which is more of a ball hawk. And he had six interceptions. You know, of course, three of them came in that memorable season opener where he almost single-handedly beat the Buffalo Bills and Josh Allen after Aaron Rodgers went down in just four plays. But I like this. I think this might be impactful. Like, you know, you hope to get the same thing from Mike Evans, right? Hall of Fame player, spit out 1,200 yards and 10 or more touchdowns. You hope you know what you're going to get from Baker Mayfield now. If he can stay healthy, over 4,000 yards, good touchdown interception ratio, lead your team. You know sort of what you're going to get from McLaughlin and Lavonte David, you know, who's an older player. But what can add to your team that you haven't had for 2 years is this dude. This dude can really do a lot of things on defense, and I think Todd Bowles I know he's very happy to have him back.
Well, and you know, much like signing your own free agents, mm-hmm. You know exactly what they're capable of. You know their strengths, their weaknesses. They know your system. They know you. Mm-hmm. They know their teammates. Well, bringing back Jordan Whitehead, how many of these guys does he still know on this team?
Everybody. Yeah. Not everyone, but most of them on defense.
And yeah. Particularly Antoine Winfield Jr.
Right. The guy he's next to.
Yeah. And yeah. Jamel Dean. And. Mm-hmm. But he also knows the system. He knows the coaches. He knows, you know, he's going to slide right in and be able to be productive immediately. And it's a lot like signing your own guys. If you've got guys that fit and work and operate your system well, that's mm-hmm. why you want to bring them back.
Right.
And you know, this one, it's you're not bringing your own free agent back, but, you know, he's only been removed, 2 years from here?
Yeah. No, he said, he goes, look, he came back, and I don't know if people are familiar with the coach, their safety coach, Nick Rapone, who's been around about as long as Bruce Arians has been alive, I think. And Nick is a great guy, very energetic, really good coach. They did a little videotape. If you check it out on Buccaneers.com, where they walked into Nick's office and told him, because he was sort of hoping and praying that would be the case. They told him that they got Jordan while Jordan is watching Nick's reaction. It was really funny. But I understand why they're so giddy about it. And the other thing he brings, Steve, like, you know, like I said, we mentioned, you know, Keanu Neal, who's physical. He got hurt at one point. Those other guys, though, like Jordan Whitehead will knock you out, right? He can take on a very stout, sizable running back one-on-one. And the guy brings a physicality that this team had been lacking on the back end a little bit. You know, Antoine's not afraid to get in, stick his head, you know, his face in the fire and all that stuff. He'll get you on the ground. This guy will leave an echo. You know what I mean? He's one of those woo players that Ronnie Lott likes to talk about. If you're one of those woo players, that's when, you know, every time you knock a guy down, everybody, the crowd goes woo, you know, because that you could hear it. It sounds different. And I think, you know, we'll see what they do. We'll get into Devin White in just a minute, but, you know, they've got to add some pieces. They still need another outside pass rusher. I think they still need, you know, growth and development from, you know, the new guys that they had last year with Yaya Diaby and that. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, assuming Jamel Dean can stay healthy, assuming that Zion McCallum can take another step and be that, he started every game just about last year, but on different positions because one or both of those guys were hurt. But if Zion can step up, you've got the makings of a nice mixture of young and old and mostly trending young, which I think you need to be. Vita Vea is still a real force in this league, still right in the prime of his career as a defensive tackle. So Todd Bowles, with guys he knows, right, and this is what this offseason has been about, is, you know, the thing about free agency is it's a little like the draft. You know, you think guys fit, you're kind of, you know, you're sort of envisioning where they're going to go, how they're going to fit in. But in what the Bucs have done, re-signing their own, there's no question about that. You know, it's not about fit. It's just about, you know, taking them and moving forward. So I love the Whitehead signing. I think it's one of the, you know, they re-signed all their own guys and now one of their own as well that they drafted out of Pittsburgh. And he's fired up. It was fun to see him come back. He never sold his house in Tampa. So, you know, there literally isn't anything that different for him to play here. He feels like it's like he didn't go away, but he did go away. And what's good about that is he comes back, not the same player, but a better player because he learned a whole different system of defense. He had to, you know, get into the film room and understand what offenses were doing, how to play coverage, you know, things that he wasn't challenged to do with Todd Bowles, but now he's got more of a universal knowledge. And the thing is, he doesn't turn 27 until this month. I mean, he's a young football player, and he's already played six seasons in the league. So I think this is, to me, when we look back on it, if this goes well next year, and every season is different, but if it goes well, I think this will be one of the better signings. So we'll wrap it up on this, I guess, is the final thing is that Devin White reached an agreement with the Philadelphia Eagles as a free agent. And he got, I think, somewhere around $7.5 million.
$7.5 million is the max it could be.
Was that what it was? Max contract. So yep. So if the max is $7.5 million, I'm gonna guess, and we haven't seen the numbers yet, I'm gonna guess the base is probably around six, something like that. Okay. It's really easy to take shots at Devin White, and I've been as critical about him as possible when it was warranted, and I think last year it was warranted. I mean, we all saw sort of what happened in Green Bay. We've been through that saga many times and talked about how, and I know this, but players in his own locker room lost faith in him. I don't think it's a coincidence that when he was out of the lineup, that team started to really play its best game at Green Bay and then went on from there. You know, KJ Britt did a great job. Eventually, reluctantly, Devin accepted a platoon role, sort of a, you know, you're going to play on this down and we're going to start KJ and, you know, he accepted it, didn't like it, but he accepted it. And, you know, they went on to have a pretty good end of the season. He didn't make a ton of plays. And there was a time when he was legitimately hurt, like injury was a real thing for him. Having said all that, people will take shots at him now on his way out of town. And that's the part that I don't like about the NFL is, you know, the social media. There's so much of this, you know, clowning that goes on and sort of, you know, trolling that goes on. But it shouldn't happen from people who say they're in the media or have a microphone just to do it, right? Just to get on there and ha ha, you thought you were going to get $100 million. Look, at one time, Devin White may have made $100 million. It just wasn't going to happen in his fifth year. You know, he expected something that wasn't going to occur, at least here, and he was going to have to play for 11.7. I don't know why Devin White went from one of the best young players I've ever seen and absolutely one of the reasons they won a Super Bowl. Not the reason, as he claimed one time, but I think, you know, one of the big, I mean, go back and watch that New Orleans game, man. They don't get out of there without him. They don't, you know? And, you know, he didn't even play in the first playoff game against Washington, but when he did play, he was sensational. And he was a big reason that defense held up and kept Patrick Mahomes out of the end zone in a Super Bowl. That almost seems impossible now when you say it, right? Like, you look at Patrick Mahomes and what he's done, and you go, yeah, you know, when Tampa played him in the Super Bowl, he didn't score a touchdown. Like, what? But that's what happened. And Devin White was a big part of that. How he lost his way a little bit as a football player, whether that was focus, conditioning. Like, I don't know all the factors that went into it, but the man is still a good football player. And he is, by the way, for those of you who want to ha-ha him about $100 million, dude still could make 7.5. So I don't know what your salary is, Steve, but between us, if somebody wants to pay me 7.5, I feel like I'm pretty important.
I might have to take a pay cut to get there, but you know.
Well, yeah. But so you have enough. If you have so many jobs, I mean, let's say they paid you 7.5 for one job, you would feel special, right? Not just the 20 that you have. But I still don't get where there seems to be a culture where a player leaves Team A, right? And by the way, the Bucs didn't want him back, to be clear, right? He had humbled. We know he's humbled now, right? Because of what he's going to accept on a one-year deal to go play for the Eagles and try to restart his career. But he would have to humbled himself a hell of a lot more to stay here and probably wouldn't have gotten that much money. But even having said that, I wish the guy well because I'm telling you, I don't think he's a bad guy at all. Mm-hmm. I actually think there's a sweet side to Devin White. I think he's a country boy. I think he's been through a lot. I think he loves horses, and I think he's got outside interests. And I think he had a lot of success really soon in his career. Mm-hmm. And maybe it went to his head a little bit, you know? But don't think that we've seen the last of him. Maybe we have. Maybe he'll go to Philadelphia and we'll never hear from him and he won't do anything.
Well, let's just put it this way. He's on a one-year prove-it deal.
Mm-hmm.
Where have we seen that before?
Good point. Really good point.
Just signed Baker Mayfield. $100 million contract.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he can make up to 7.5 this year, but he has a great year this year on that.
He can make his $100 million next year.
He absolutely could.
Absolutely could. This is not a bad signing for Howie Roseman. Trust me.
No.
You know, to get a guy that everybody, when I say everybody, most everybody would have taken this guy in the top 10 at inside linebacker, which does not happen today.
Yep.
In the NFL. He was legit, and he proved it when he came out and you know, was he the most disciplined? Could he excel in coverage? You know, there's a lot of things he didn't do, but what he did do was make plays, and he was a freakish athlete. Man, you're talking about a guy that's 240 pounds and can just absolutely fly to the ball. And I think he still loves ball. I think he does love football. I think he was really, really young, and sometimes – stop me if you've heard this before. When you have a lot of success and you're still very, very young and you're given a lot of money and time, it's sometimes hard to handle. I have children, and trust me, I don't know that any of them, in fact, I know some of them could not have handled that kind of success and or money at that age, you know? Mm-hmm. And I still got young girls, but certainly my son, you talk about a dude, you know, guys between the ages of 18 and 23, there's a lot of knuckleheads going on there. So, you know, toss in, you know, a couple tens of millions of dollars and fame and all that, I don't know how they would handle it. But I guess there's, to me, there's a lot of people mm-hmm. who haven't attempted what these guys have attempted, who haven't put themselves, as Tom Brady says, in the arena, the man in the arena. And until you've been in that arena, I just think that the least you can afford someone is respect, right? Respect the fact that they have already beaten the odds by being a college athlete, by being a scholarship college athlete, by being a scholarship college athlete that got to the NFL, by being one that was drafted into the NFL, by being a top 10 draft pick in the NFL, by being a Pro Bowler, by winning a Super Bowl in their second year. Like, those are rare, rare things that go on your Wikipedia page that few of us would ever do. And to do it by the age of 23, 24 years old, that's heady stuff, right? His story is not over. It is not written. But take all the shots you want to, you know, and don't be surprised if Devin White plays his best football in Philadelphia this year. That's all I know.
You know what's surprising, too, about that 2019 draft is there was two inside linebackers that went top 10, which you rarely see an inside linebacker do that.
Were they both named Devin?
Yep, Devin White and Devin Bush, and neither one have lived up maybe to their what you expected by this point of their career as far as the type of deal. I mean, Devin Bush is, what, going to his third or fourth team now?
He's signed with Devin Bush, you know, clearly was not the player that Devin White has been.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he also just recently found another team. Drafted originally by Pittsburgh,
He was in Seattle last year. He's going to Cleveland this year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Neither one of those have become, say, elite inside linebackers by this point in their career.
Yeah. It's a tough position. It's one that, you know, mm-hmm. nowadays requires a lot more than it used to. You don't draft a Mike Singletary, you know, to sit in the middle and just root out ball carriers, you know, or occasionally blitz. Like, and Devin has some exceptional qualities as a pass rusher. He's elite from, you know, that double A gap stand up, you know, rush the quarterback thing. I mean, he's really good, like really mm-hmm. good. So he flashed early, and you're right. Devin Bush didn't make the plays he made, but that's the thing. Like, you know, and that makes you appreciate when you see a Levante David at 34 and being a pro's pro. And you know, I know this. Levante took Devin under his wing. He was a great mentor for him. But in the end, the player has to want to do those things and accept that mentorship and follow that example. And I think Devin tried, through a lot of things in his personal life. I'm not gonna make excuses for him, but you know, you end up having your father die in prison over some sketchy circumstances, you know, before he goes to play Seattle in Germany and then has 20 tackles. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that he suffered. And all I know is for our standpoint, from a media standpoint, even when things were bad and they got bad at times, he would stand there. He would not be, you know, you can disagree, but he was never disagreeable, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't ever feel like, ooh, this is going to be bad today. It wasn't that sort of moodiness. He would answer the questions. Maybe he didn't like maybe they weren't great answers. Maybe you need a little media training. I don't know. But at the end of the day, he was a stand-up guy. I wish him well. I think he's a terrific story. You know, going back to his Louisiana days, they did a story on NFL 360 about the Wild Horses losing his brother at a young age, who was his whole world, raised by a single mom in nowhere, Countryville, Louisiana, on the border of Arkansas. Like, I think the guy has had a remarkable career so far, regardless of what the Bucs or the last year did to jade people. Anyway, I wish him well. I wish people get off his back. And don't be surprised if Philadelphia and Tampa Bay don't meet, and that's going to be a story if Devin White, you know, plays against his former team. And then finally, we get to see if the USF Bulls men's basketball team can carry that shoulder chip all the way to the NCAA tournament. They finally get to start their portion of the AAC tournament against, I like East Carolina, as Brett Musburger would say. Look, we'll see. They have to win it. I don't think there's going to be any at-large berths handed out to them. What's interesting is that they're managing to carry their, you know, like I said, they're being slighted. You know, they're looking for little angles, like whether a certain player was left off the first, second, and third all-conference team or whatever. The fact that they were picked ninth in the conference preseason, like all those things, like they're storing up for this one. Look, all that matters is you got to win. What do they got to win? Three games?
Yeah, there's three games. They'll play East Carolina. Then they'll play the winner of Wichita State, UAB. Wichita mm-hmm. State will upset Memphis. And then presumably if they get to the final, most likely would be either FAU or Charlotte.
Or Coastal, yeah. Charlotte, rather, yeah. Well, it's all there for them. They've been the best team all year. No reason to think that that's going to change in the tournament, but would really been an unbelievable season. It's been exciting. We'd love to see them in that NCAA March Madness thing, but we're here. March Madness is here. I mean, it really starts with the conference tournaments this weekend.
Selection Sunday is Sunday for St. Patrick's Day.
On St. Patty's Day. Got the corned beef ready, got all the green beer, all that stuff, and then March Madness. So what more could you ask for?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Do we have one mailbag question you want to get to or not? I forgot to ask you about this.
We did ask solicit for some mailbag questions, so let me... Well, actually, we had several questions on the same topic.
Okay.
But I'll read the question from Greg. Jason Light surpassed Rich McKay as the best GM in team history? I mean, he's no Phil Kruger, but does he belong in the Bucks Ring of Honor? And why was no player inducted in 2023?
It's a good question. I think no player was inducted because they already had a special night with Rondé Barber going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He got his ring, as you recall. So I don't know. It doesn't. They're not necessarily mutually exclusive. It doesn't mean that just because you have a Hall of Famer that you need to cancel the Ring of Honor. But I think they just wanted to take a breather and think about it. I think the next decisions are going to be a little more, you know, maybe a little more tricky. Take some time, put a little air between them, maybe create more space in the stadium. Maybe they'll have a new stadium by the time they put the next one up. I don't know. It's a great question. And what was the other first part of that?
Is Jason Light surpassed Rich McKay as the best GM in team?
Well, they both have a Super Bowl win. It depends on how you measure that, but I would say the easy answer is yes. It's not that easy, but I mean, both of them went to the playoffs four times, and Rich did it four times in 6 years. Jason has done it 4 years in a row. I mean, how do you look at it? You know, Jason's first 6 years, no playoffs, right? He's had three head coaches. Rich really had just two, you know, Tony Dungy, who he hired, and then John Gruden, who eventually couldn't get along with him, and after winning the Super Bowl, gained power and wanted to bring his own GM in, and it was Bruce Allen.
Well, not, but in Jason's defense, Bruce Arians did retire.
He did retire, yes.
I mean, you know, it's not like he was forced out or fired or...
Okay.
Although some could argue.
Wasn't he? Okay. So we'll make sure we got history.
Let's ask TB12.
Yeah. Wasn't Jason's doing. And then I think, here's the thing. The one thing that will hurt Rich, and you know, if you're trying to do these comparisons, is this. Before he became GM, one of the greatest drafts in Buccaneer history took place. And that's with Derek Brooks and Warren Sapp in the 95 draft. The problem was he didn't run it. That was Sam Weich. So while he had those players, you know, here while he was a general manager, like the next year, he wasn't responsible for drafting them. I think you measure, you know, in terms of like players and who you drafted, how about if your first pick is Mike Evans? I mean, your first pick ever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hall of Famer. I believe he's going to end up in Canton. Okay. Then you go, well, what about, and I'll get to Levante in a minute, but what about Tristan Wirfs? Yeah. If he plays 8 years, you know, another three years or so, 4 years or so, Hall of Famer. What about Antoine Winfield Jr.? Hall of Famer. You could have a draft that sort of rivals Brooks and Sapp in that you had Winfield and Wirfs in that draft. That's a Jason Light draft. Okay. How about the trade? Not the trade. How about the signing of Tom Brady?
I was going to say, he had a roster good enough to bring Tom Brady here.
Attracted Tom Brady with a roster and had to sell the whole situation, not just the roster, but he also was responsible for hiring Bruce Arians. I don't think Tom Brady, even though there was some clashing there during the end, but I think you needed somebody who was special, like Bruce Arians is special, to handle a celebrity quarterback the way he did. And I think Jason gets credit for that because I don't know that Tom Brady comes here under Dirk Cutter. You know what I'm saying? Like I think getting Bruce made that possible as well. And then Jason also had worked for the Patriots, and so they were familiar with each other. So you got to give him credit for not just having Tom Brady, but then getting him back after retirement, and that's part of the four straight playoffs, which is the longest current run in the NFC. So for all those things, if I just resume them together, it's going to be close. But I think I would give the edge to Jason Light. And the other thing is the story isn't written, right? He's still going, man. Like, we know he's going to get this year, maybe future years, maybe even gets to hire another coach. I don't know. But certainly it's not done yet, and it's looking pretty good so far. All right. So, more free agency, of course, this weekend. We told you about the games. Should be a great one with March Madness or March Madness, what do they call it? How do you reverse
Match
that?
Match Madness.
That's it. Match Madness. Yes, I love that. However you say it, it's going to be fun to sit around and watch Selection Sunday. So
the guys love when we talk about them.
Yeah, I know. We'll be back, apparently. We'll be back on Sunday to talk to you for Monday's podcast. We'll do this on Sunday. We'll have the brackets, and we will pick the winner of the NCAA. No, we won't do that. But we will talk about it, and be back with you bright and early or whenever you listen on Monday. Thanks for listening. For Steve Burstick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tempe Times. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.